Before I start this episode, I need to share that this podcast with Leslie Brewington was recorded prior to the current civil unrest happening across our country. She and I connected about continuing with the release of the episode, and we both thought it was still relevant to share. As a Black woman in leadership, Leslie has amazing insight into what our schools are currently facing, and will definitely plan that topic for a future episode. My hope is that you can lean into this conversation for renewed hope that social media can be a tool for positive change and meaningful connection when our communities need it most. Hey there, welcome back to the Mastering Social Media for Schools podcast brought to you by socialschoolforedu.com. Andrea here, your host, and I am so excited to share Leslie Brewington, APR out of Tuscaloosa City Schools. The interview today, you're going to take so much away from this. Leslie is a seasoned veteran. She's going to talk about how they actually got started in social media back in 2011 after a crisis, a tornado that ripped through her community and caused her superintendent to finally pull the trigger and say, yes, you can get on Facebook. She's going to dive into a little bit of branding, and you'll check out their cool logo. You'll see that all in the show notes. She's going to talk about unique ways that they've used social media to really engage and bring their community together, both back when that first tornado hit all the way up into COVID-19 times. She's going to break down their video strategy. They've actually had video in their department for 20 years, which is amazing, but they've really started breaking that video down into digestible components to use for social media. And then we're going to talk a little bit about NSPRA. She's the president-elect of the National School Public Relations Association. It's a great place. That's how I actually got to meet Leslie and so many amazing school PR folks. And we're going to talk about that organization, what they offer. And if you're not a communications, like, that's not your title. It's really about the task of communications and not the title that you have. And so they really welcome everybody in. So lean into today's episode. You're going to learn so much, and I can't wait for you to meet Leslie. I'm Andrea Gribble, a Wisconsin mom who got laid off from her corporate career and jumped into entrepreneurship, not knowing exactly where that road might lead. I'm a natural-born cheerleader who discovered a way to cheer on schools through the power of social media. Turns out, social media isn't easy. I had to figure out what I was doing, and now I'm here to teach you everything I've learned. The Mastering Social Media for Schools podcast gives you simple, actionable strategies to celebrate your students and connect your communities through the power of social media. Join me as I pick the brains of experts across the country to bring you the best tips and tricks to make your school social media shine. Before we get started, let's start, as we always do, with a K-12 PR tip. And today I'm going to actually talk about emojis and branding. So emojis, using emojis in your social media posts is a great way to increase engagement. Some say that there's 86% more engagement when you use emojis. Well, Leslie has a very unique brand in that they have some kind of neon green colors, a bright green color that matches what? The green apple, which is an emoji. They actually use it in their Twitter handle, which is super cool. You can get the direct link in the show notes. But my tip to you is, how can you use some of the emojis into your branding colors? You may not have an apple as your mascot, and you may not have a designated emoji that you can use, but what about the hearts? There's colored hearts, and so, you know, if you are blue and yellow or red and white, there's ways to incorporate those hearts into some of your social posts. If you're the eagles, there's an eagle. If there's a bear, you might have the bear. So that's just my tip today is how can you incorporate some of those standard emojis into your posts? And we have a great blog actually on emojis and how you can use them. I've linked that blog in the show notes for you. So I can't wait to see how you use them. Now let's get into today's interview with Leslie Brewington. Welcome to the podcast, Leslie Brewington. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm really good. We are joining via the lovely internet, and you are joining us from Alabama, right?
I am. So things have kind of calmed down for me just a little bit. School has wrapped up here in Alabama, so I'm transitioning from COVID response to, COVID post response, school's out / summer / gear up for back to school.
Yeah. Your job list and responsibilities just keep growing. I've known you for a long time. I've been following your work in Tuscaloosa City Schools, but why don't you tell all the listeners, a little bit about yourself?
I'm a former television reporter, and a lot of people in my family are educators, my mom, my dad, my grandmother, great-grandmother, cousin, and aunt. And I always said, I'm not going into education. The family business, not for me. I got into television news straight out of college, and I always knew it was a for-now job. I never considered it a forever job. Just didn't know what I would do after now was up. And now coincided with the birth of my first child and started looking for something that didn't have me working nights, weekends, and holidays. Because if you want to get really good in journalism, you need to work nights, weekends, and holidays. So, and I was doing sports at the time too. I was actually a sports anchor.
Awesome.
So I ended up working in local school system doing public relations. So right back in the family business.
That's crazy. And most of my guests, it's either they were a former teacher or former journalist that gets into, kind of school PR. So how long have you been with Tuscaloosa City Schools?
All told, probably about 11 years. I started and worked for about 19 months, and then the Great Recession hit and the school system made the decision to eliminate my position. And then I left the profession for a short period of time. And then eventually came back. The school system determined that it did want to have a public relations practice in place. And so they reposted my job. And I tell everybody I waddled back in 8.5 months pregnant with my second child. And then about 5.5 weeks later, we had an EF4 tornado that hit 3 of our schools. And then 1.5 weeks after that, I had a baby. And then when I came back from maternity leave, I had a new superintendent.
Holy cow. We thought we had it tough during COVID-19, which obviously we do, but that was that's a lot of change in a short amount of time.
There are some similarities between that crisis that I could draw on to this crisis, but a lot has changed in the intervening 9 years. So my son recently turned 9, and that's kind of how I mark time around here to the tornado, which is a huge, it's a huge marker for people in Tuscaloosa, that you kind of mark things by that significant event, just like COVID-19 will be. So for me, marking the tornado coincides with the birth of my second child.
Oh my goodness. And I actually remember when that hit, because I was back in my corporate days before I started this company, and we had a huge, our screen supplier, Pfeiffer Wire, is down in, yes, Tuscaloosa. So I've been to Tuscaloosa. I've got an Alabama shirt, even though I'm a
tried and true. You've been to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, a few times. So
that's crazy. Yeah. My next door neighbor actually worked for that company for many, many years and retired. So it was a very small world.
Oh, geez. And now we get to connect on a different level and have been connected, first via social media, which is awesome, which is what we're all about here. But can you explain a little bit more about the demographics of Tuscaloosa City Schools and like how your communications department is set up?
So my school system serves a little over 11,000 students. We've been increasingly ticking up over the past 10, 11 years since I've been connected with the school system. We are about 73% African-American, 23% Caucasian, And then we have, you know, people of Latino background and other ethnicities that make up the mix of the Tuscaloosa City Schools. Our school district is considered Title I. So we do serve children coming from challenging backgrounds. And going through this particular situation has been very interesting. You know, one of the things that when you and I started talking today was talking about my introduction to the Tuscaloosa City Schools, but I think my reintroduction is pretty relevant. When the tornado hit in 2011, it knocked out our telecommunication systems. So we had no access to telephone and our website was shot. There was no way to communicate with anybody. And I had recalled an article that was published in the New York Times in January of 2011 that talked about getting in touch or connecting with communities of color using social media. And that article really just stood out for me. So I knew that since we didn't have the phone system, we didn't have email, we didn't have the website, we had nothing. We were out in the dark. I knew that social media would be an opportunity for us. And so at that period of time in 2011, people who've been working in the business for a while may be familiar with this. Technology departments will kind of put the lock on a lot of things and say, nope, thou shalt not. And people just believed them and never questioned it because the technology person said so, and that was all that was needed. But, you know, when you have a big crisis like a tornado and people are trying to figure out, are schools up and running? Do we bring our kids to school the next day? That kind of thing. So we got on, we were already on Twitter, but Facebook was locked down at the time. And I made my case at 9 months pregnant to the then superintendent that we need to connect with our stakeholders on social media. And I will never forget, she looked over and told the technology person to make it happen. So that was probably the fastest any kind of collaboration between the communications person and the technology person ever happened. But needless to say, I track our birth on social media for the Tuscaloosa City Schools coinciding with the tornado's aftermath.
And that was relatively early because 2011, I mean, Facebook really got the start in 2008, 2009, right? So
for school systems, it was novel. I mean, you didn't see school systems. I mean, at that point in time, you had lots of people coming off of MySpace and folks in their late 20s, early 30s hopping on Facebook because that's when they allowed the grown folks to get on Facebook. Remember, it was something for college students. And so lots of people that were starting to get on Facebook were sharing, you know, their engagement pictures and their baby announcements and the, you know, baby shower stuff. So it was really kind of novel for a school system to be using social media in that way. As a matter of fact, I now realize how novel it was. Our situation got picked up as a case study and appeared in a couple of publications and was cited in some congressional testimony as far as connecting with stakeholders. So at the time, it was the only resource that I had available. But looking back on it, I'm really proud of kind of being a forerunner in this area. And for as long as social media has been around, again, I have a 9-year-old, for as long as school systems have been using it, not all school systems have or do use social media. You see this in your job and the work that you're doing in helping schools and school systems connect with their own stakeholders. There's still some trepidation about how to use social, how to use it effectively. Should we even be using it? It's kind of become second nature to us in Tuscaloosa City Schools. So if something were to happen and we didn't use social media, I think people would, you know, wonder if everybody's okay.
Yeah. And you now have over 14,000 followers just on your Facebook page, which is huge. You know, you've got 11,000 students. Just for our listeners, my goal always with our Facebook fans is to try to match your enrollment. So good job, Leslie. You guys are past that. And, you know, sometimes the bigger the school, obviously the harder it is to get to that number. My school district that I started with only has 300 students in their whole K-12. And we're up, I think, almost 1,900 followers. So we're obviously smashing that. So I was just listening to a podcast where they were talking about, you know, we just jumped in and kind of figured out the rules as we went instead of trying to figure out all the rules and all the, you know, precautionary things we need to do. So you obviously, when you started with that crisis, with the tornado, you just kind of jumped into Facebook and then probably figured out some things, you know, as you were working through it in regards to rules, regulations, all of that. Can you just share that?
The time between leaving the Tuscaloosa City Schools and returning to the Tuscaloosa City Schools, I actually worked for the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute as its head of communication, and I had an opportunity to get the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute onto social media in a more prominent way. So that time away from the school system was very helpful for me to try some new strategies and doing research, including that New York Times article that I told you about. So I felt comfortable in my proficiency going into it, just keeping in mind that we are a brand. When I worked for the Institute, that was an organization with an international footprint. So I had to keep that in mind. What does that mean to have a footprint that's locally, a reputation locally, and how do you portray that? So our school system has been around, I believe, since 1885. That's a very long time. And There's a lot tied up into that history of our school system. There's, you know, court desegregation orders, challenging periods of time through our school system. But who are we now? So shortly after getting the getting on social media, the new superintendent came and encouraged us to get a new logo. So we got a new logo, and that was an opportunity to really look at who we wanted to be. And the logo that we had at the time when I started, I would say it was more traditional. It was more staid. It looked like a crest, much like many people have. And then we come up with this logo with a color as lime green. And at the time in 2012, I mean, that was a shock. The superintendent secretary hated it. She probably still does not like it. I mean, her lips would just purse and she would just twitch her jaw back and forth and tell me that she did not like it. But when I saw that it was ubiquitous and it started catching on, it looks great on social media. And so I knew that when it became a hit, when I started seeing children replicate it in its artwork and art teachers using it as a prompt. I'm looking in my home office right now, a picture that a student did of a bunch of kids. I'm going to show it to you. I know that, you know, you and I are looking at each other, but maybe we can post this later and people can find it. But yes, the student did a multicultural picture of students in our district holding a green TCS flag. So I knew I was on to something, and all of these things tie in. And I'll tell you a strange little secret. We have not changed our profile picture on social media since 2012.
I love that because I think, you know, staying with that consistent brand, you've got kind of the apple in there with the C. It's really great. And I also love it because you have an emoji, the green apple, mm-hmm. that you can use. You even use it in your Twitter name, which is awesome. And we're going to link that all in the show notes. That picture is beautiful. And we'll make sure if you can snap a picture afterwards, I'll get that linked in the show notes as well. So I love it. And it's very relevant. And I agree. There's a lot of schools out there that still kind of have some outdated crests or other things. I mean, when you have a brand, don't you think when you have a brand, you can get behind? It's part of your story. And it's part of, you know, not that you forget the past, but you're moving forward and a little more relevant.
One of the things that I like about this kind of work is the idea of creating a backstory with your logo. And so when we had it developed, I was like, what's the backstory? So the backstory of our logo is that there's this tradition. You see the apple in the center of our logo, which ties to traditional elements of education, but the green is this juxtaposition of innovation and where we are headed into the future. And so I think that's why it's maintained its relevancy so well in the last 8 years that we've never changed our logo on social media. And then I had a team member, you had asked about the construction of my department. So it's me and two others. I had a team member that does digital communication, website, social media. He's no longer with us, but he was a a younger fellow. And one day I totally empowered him to do our social media. And one day I come in and he's changed our user or handle on Twitter to include a green apple. The green apple is one of the emojis there. So instead of it saying TCS Board of Ed, it's T Green Apple S Board of Ed. I think that's kind of fun and it's just clever. So why not do it?
I love it.
Seriously.
Yeah, I've got the tab open and then even on the top of the tab, it just makes it stand out. So really, really good branding. So, okay, so it's you and two others in your department. What, I guess, unique ways have you, you know, used social media, you know, now that you might be able to share with our listeners?
Okay, so I'll give you one to after the tornado. We put out this call for help. You know, we needed to move things. We had gaping holes in the side of buildings because this EF4 tornado came through, and we put out a call for volunteers. And within 30 minutes, 70 people showed up, which is very overwhelming if you don't know how to process all of that. So that's one. Was not expecting that. I would say that's the power of social media. And it got to the point when we hit about 70 people, we had to put out another message, please don't show up here. We're good. We can't handle any more people. Go to this other site. So all of these people showed up at one school and the principal's like, I got too many. I don't know what to do. So that's the power of social media. I'll give you another example of it. I told you that I work for a high poverty school system. So we knew that there would be issues of digital divide. In COVID-19, our school system has a one-to-one device distribution for some grades, but not all grades. But in the aftermath of COVID-19, we needed to spin that up kind of quickly to make sure that technology wasn't going to be a barrier for some of our students. So like many school systems, we have the automated messaging. We have emails and text messages. We have, you know, mailing lists, that kind of thing. But that information is only so good as what goes in, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So what I knew would work was social media. You rightly talked about how many people, how many followers we have. And I knew I could use that to our advantage. I have some schools that if they share just any random thing, I have three high schools. I have one high school, the first thing they ever shared was shared, it had 25,000 impressions, the very first post that ever shared. And these things just stand out. So, because they're crazy. I mean, who has, you know, who shows up on social media and has a call for volunteers and all these people show up or gets on social media and their very first post is 25,000 impressions and then I stop counting. So I knew whatever we shared on social media would be reshared or retweeted over and over again. We have an opportunity with one of our providers where people can text us information. We could ask a question, they could text us information. So what we did was I started thinking about how do we get information to our families in the aftermath of COVID-19. That very first week when we shut down, before you get computers out, lots of schools did academic packets, and we did academic packets so we could stand up the computer distribution. So on social media, we put out all kinds of communication that said, text us at this number for an academic packet. We only offered that for about a week before we went to the device learning, but we got 2,500 requests for packets. And some of those represent mama texting us about three kids or two kids. So, you know, it was more than 2,500. And the crazy thing was we would get people from other school systems saying, can we get a packet? And we're like, you need to check with your own school system. This is just for our school system. But it was so overwhelming. Like, we had a good team working out on the back end, but it was so overwhelming for them. They're like, please don't post this number anymore. Because that's how much feedback we got. So I recognize the power of communication, and I need to channel my power carefully because it can be a deluge, as I've seen. You might want to think twice about asking for my help, actually.
Right. You're pretty, it's a great way to get attention, but sometimes almost too much. So you've got systems set up and then getting the word out. It definitely powerful. I've been impressed with the way that you guys have utilized video on your social channels. I'm just watching your strategic plan. You're trying to get feedback from your community and doing a lot of videos with your superintendent. Can you just talk about the how you use social or video in your social media strategy?
So our school system has had a video component for over 20 years. We have a video media specialist. He's one of my team members. He's been there for a long time. We have been producing a 30-minute show for years. And we decided this year that maybe we shouldn't do the 30-minute show. I mean, who's watching television by appointment anymore? But in the 30-minute show, we would break apart the components of it and share it on social media. We've always done this. You know, when you have to fight for coverage in a shrinking media market, or if you don't have media markets, how do you do that? And how do you use video? And a lot of school systems are starting to add this to their mix. But when I realized about the strength of our program is that we've had video for a very long time, how do we incorporate it in a more prominent way? And I think that's what you probably have noticed about our social media in recent, maybe the past semester, the past school year, that you see it play more prominently. That if we have this resource, why are we not showcasing it more fully? We know based on research and analytics that posts with images or videos seem to engage with stakeholders more. So why not include those things? You know, those early posts that we have were largely text only post-tornado, but the philosophy has changed. Even back then, post-tornado, it was post it to Facebook and let it bounce to Twitter. And then your Twitter would say, visit me on Facebook to read more. And we know that people who tweet don't like to go to Facebook for a reason. So the thinking has changed in social media. And what we're trying to do is develop content that creates connection. I know which schools have followings around certain features, whether it's sports or a beloved principal or a beloved teacher. And then how do we share those things? What we've noticed is that as the district shares those things, you'll see people who are alums that maybe still follow. Maybe they joined us 9 years ago, but you know, now they're a parent of our children and they see their school getting an award or a kudos, and then they share that and feel good. And that's why probably I have that high school that on their first post got 25,000 you know, impressions and multiple shares. Here recently we had a principal whose retirement was announced, unfortunately, during the middle of a pandemic. And when you start thinking about, you know, how do you say goodbye to someone who's had 51 years in public education?
Gosh.
I know, right? And so you start looking at what's going on, and those parents and teachers and supporters of that school are seeing the same ideas that we're all seeing online, and whether it's a drive-through parade or what have you, they decided to host a drive-through parade for that particular principal. And I'm going to click on it. Hopefully, it won't make too much noise right now. But when I look at the impressions from that, I mean, it was just shared hundreds of times, hundreds of times. And that's kind of crazy to think about that. But when you think about an administrator that's worked in public education for 51 years, the amount of lives and families she's touched tangentially, that those circles just grow and grow and grow like, you know, ripples in a pond.
Yeah, and you get to say thank you, and you get to have, you know, invite everybody to be part of that. Yeah, I can tell, you know, your video use is very strategic, breaking it down into, you know, 1 minute videos that are going to be shared out there. We've noticed, Leslie, that there's significantly more reach on Facebook pages where you're sharing at least one video a week versus just trying to share. And that's natively on Facebook. So you're not sharing a YouTube link. You're actually uploading that MP4, you know, or the .mov file right into Facebook and sharing that. You're going to get more reach. People, you know, that yes, we like the nice pictures and, you know, maybe all of these updates, but when you can turn some of these like COVID-19 updates into video updates, it changes things. So,
well, you hit the nail on the head. We realized this a couple of years ago that in how the algorithm was working, you were not rewarded for posting a video onto Facebook from another platform. So it doesn't seem to show up as natively in your Facebook feed when it's coming from YouTube or Vimeo or something else. So in that way, it might be double work to upload it to Facebook and to upload it to YouTube, but there are different reasons for both. I mean, Facebook is a flowing river. Things go through all the time. But if I'm wanting to kind of have it so it can be archived, we put it on YouTube as well. You talked about our video strategy for COVID-19 with our superintendent. We made a decision very quickly that we would produce daily information about COVID-19 and our school system's response, which was a lot of work. So it took me back to my days as a reporter. Every night I would produce a staff and a community newsletter, and it would drop every morning at 8 a.m. Our media market is kind of tightening, unfortunately. There's been a loss of reporters, and so the access to information has been a challenge. And I think from my own personal philosophy that we build trust through transparency and telling people what you know when you know it, as soon as you know it. And that's what we worked on doing. And that repetition, the regularity of when those videos would drop, we would record them in bulk. So once a week, we would be about 6 feet away from the superintendent, and we would bulk up a bunch of interviews and dribble them out over the course of a week so we'd have enough content.
That's really good strategy. We use that a lot in regards to, we call it batching, right? And so you get it all together, get everything set up the way you need to. Your videos look great. Obviously, you've got 20 years of experience. But folks, if you just, your cell phone is an awesome video recorder. As long as the audio comes through, you can share those things out. And if your superintendent isn't super comfortable, find maybe somebody who is that can give some of those video updates. But luckily, your superintendent seems to be pretty comfortable in front of the camera.
He is, and he recognizes the importance of it. So what you find in crisis communication, it's not necessarily the spokesperson that people are looking to for reassurances about how the organization is operating. It's the top dog. So I would say now more than ever, you know, if you are a school PR practitioner and you can encourage your superintendent or the principal to get on camera to do the interviews, that's where people are looking for the reinsurances, not from the talking head that's supposed to toe the party line. I think it speaks to leadership, and I think people can read into your top dog's personality and their communication and their crisis response. All of those things contribute to a community feeling a comfort level with the response.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just switch gears a little bit because, Leslie, you are the ENSPRA president-elect, which is a huge, huge deal, and I'm so excited for you. So ENSPRA is the National School Public Relations Association. I've been associated with them and have been able to connect with awesome people like you over the past 6.5 years since I've been in this business. Talk to me a little bit about ENSPRA and then your role, that's coming up here, or that's already started, but...
Well, ENSPRA is a nationwide organization. It also has members in Canada, and I think we have some members in South America. There was a podcast or something recently, and somebody weighed in from another country, which I think is pretty cool. But it's an organization that gets you. So many times when you're working for a school system, you're probably the only one, or I have a department. There's a couple of us that understand this work, but by and large, it's like translating to others inside of my own building who don't understand what I'm doing. They just know that it works. So the opportunity to be around people once a year at the annual seminar has been helpful to collaborate, to commiserate, to grow and to learn and to share. This year is a little bit atypical. COVID-19 has interrupted a lot, including you know, our year of board service and what we maybe anticipated or thought we would be working on. But I think it's an opportunity for us as board members to model those best practices in communication, how we respond to the fact that we will not get to have an in-person seminar this year. Our organization has had in-person seminars for, I think, well over 60 years unbroken. So that's a challenge. But what does our organization look like in the future? What do we want it to be? How does it position itself for a shift? Also, in the middle of all this, our executive director, who's been working for INSPA for 32 years, has announced his retirement, and we are we'll be conducting a search for a new executive director. So it's a really interesting time. It's a phase of transition in so many ways, but I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. I consider myself to be fortunate to be in the seat I am at the time that I am. You know, maybe one day when I look back on my career, I can say that was really cool. Right now, it's a lot to be dealing with this in the middle of, you know, local school system COVID-19 response. But part of the reason why I sought board service was my own story. I told you about the school system having eliminated my position. I believe that we should be advocating for this profession as practitioners, and I would like to see superintendents advocate for this profession, or at least understand what we do and understand that it's not something that's expendable, something to be cut, but something in which you can invest and be partners in education for students in your local community. And I guess the hallmark of my work in the past couple of years has been, how can I show value and worth in communication on the curriculum side of the house? So how do I partner with them? Because I think for the first few years of my career, I was kind of a satellite on the outside of the action of the school system. But if I've got to sit in those meetings about curriculum and the other operational details of the school system, how can I apply the things that I know from my profession to the larger goals the system wants to accomplish? And so that's the career shift I'm in right now. I really enjoy that. So I'm fortunate to work in a school system that allows me the opportunity to contribute, to ask questions, to think differently, to push the envelope. I see myself as maybe a little bit of an ombudsman for our parents, people who don't have a seat at the table, and an opportunity for me to ask tough questions before we turn a plan out on the community, before they start asking the tough questions.
Absolutely. And INSPRA is the national organization, which, you know, I would say, and I don't know if you've got data on this, but out of all the school districts like in the country, I mean, there might be only 20 to 25% that actually have someone in the communication role. There's a lot of small schools that don't have anybody, but INSPRA welcomes everybody. So if you have any, if you're a superintendent, if you're a principal, if you're an administrator to a superintendent that handles a lot of the communication, we would welcome you in. You have so many resources available, especially a lot of things with crisis. I mean, I had that before because, you know, we're all dealing with different things, but of course, special COVID-19, there's just a very interconnectedness, and I have never experienced such an amazing group of people as school communicators, as far as sharing. Like, it's not, you know, they just want to help you out. And so I think being in that community, whether it's the national chapter or many states, most states have a state chapter, which you can get involved with too. So
I think, yes, it's a non-territorial organization, which is a good thing. I think people are willing to share. And I like to position it a little bit differently. I'm a member of the Alabama state chapter. It's called ALSPRA. And we found a few years back when we started doing some research on this, we had 136 school systems, maybe about 17 or 18 had dedicated school PR folks, which would fall in line with the numbers that you're thinking there. So it's a small percentage. What we started doing, we positioned ourselves differently as an organization in our state, was recognize that not every school system had a dedicated PR practitioner, but every school system had a need for effective stakeholder engagement. So if you are not a school PR practitioner and you don't work in that role, but you are helping to assist, whether it's you manage the social media page or you, you know, connect in other ways, that whole other duties as assigned, then you do have a space and a place within INSPRA to learn and to grow. We find oftentimes it's not the title, it's the task that we're working on that's more that bounds us. You'll see lots of different people with different titles in INSPRA. As a matter of fact, you'll find superintendents of smaller districts who have to do it all. You know, maybe they're managing the social media pages and making the automated message calls too. So there's a space and a place for everyone. And I think the neat thing about the organization is that it's a arm stretched open. Let me share what I know. Not coming from a place of expertise, but just a place of education and how can I help you? You rightly recognize that a lot of us come to this profession from different places, whether it's a teacher or a former journalist. I think the important thing is not how you arrived. It's are you willing to do the work to understand the professional practice of your new profession? So, you know, for some of us, we go back to school. For some of us, we seek accreditation in public relations. And for some, it's simply, you know, doing continued education. And all of those things are valuable and have a place. And if you engage in them, they will help you become a stronger practitioner. And that should be the end goal at the end of the day. How can I be more effective in my job so that our community can better serve our students and our parents?
That's so well said, Leslie. And I'm a better communicator and have learned so much because I get to hang out with you. I'm just really excited. So as we wrap this up, Leslie, what message do you want to share with other school PR pros out there right now? This is going to air towards the end of June, you know, but what would you kind of parting words would you want to share with everybody?
Breathe, exhale. I mean, in post-COVID land, you know, I think in the opening days of all of the school closures, we probably all saw this post out there that said, if you don't come through the pandemic without a new side hustle, a hobby or something, then, you know, you've wasted your time. And then the next meme came out that said, no, if you just come through the pandemic, you're fine. But, you know, I think you have probably distilled the essence of your professional self during this time. It has been a fire, and like fire, it refines. And so you've refined different parts of your professional practice. Maybe you got really good at social media. Maybe you got really good at content creation. Maybe you got really good at digital storytelling. And those are great things. So how do you take that into the new school year? I think it's really important for practitioners to have a delineation between, okay, the end of the school year, even though some of our communities are still, you know, on kind of shut down, but you need to have a delineation. I am done with the end of the 2019-2020 school year. I need to prepare for the 2020-2021 school year. So graduations and all the celebrations are probably throwing everything off play, but my team and I had a meeting yesterday and we talked about some of the projects that we typically do in the summer. We are still working from home at this point in time. And I said, you know, when we return back to the office, I'm not taking these summer projects with me. It's not going to happen. And so my video guide and I were working yesterday on preparing for the annual report and how we're going to pull stories and what was going to be in the annual report. And I get a text message from him. He said, wow, you really got in there, knocked it out. I said, I'm not taking this work back with me into the office because I want to work on new projects. I mean, I've been eyeball deep in this for the past 2.5 months. I'm ready for new challenges to, I don't know, re-energize my professional practice. And how do I take what I've learned and get better? So I'm choosing a positive outlook, a forward-thinking outlook, and how do I reflect on what I've learned and use that to grow?
Yeah, that's good advice for all of us. What's the best way for our listeners to stay connected or get connected with you, Leslie?
I'm regularly on Twitter. I use Twitter as my professional learning network where I connect with school PR colleagues. So I'm at Leslie Brewington. If you can spell my name, you can find me. That's also how I know if people who email me actually know me, if they spell my name correctly or not. So I use the hashtags K-12 PR chat a lot. I use hashtag school PR a lot. If you want to connect with me, then just tag me and use those hashtags. I like to keep the conversation going between all the people that I've met across the nation, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great place to stay connected. I'll link all of, you know, the Tuscaloosa City profiles out there. I'll definitely link to your Twitter handle so that they have that. Thank you so much for taking the time, Leslie. I appreciate it. I know we tried a couple times to get this set up, but it's been busy. But I hope you get the chance to breathe in to this next school year. I'm excited to see where you go. And I know this conversation is going to be so helpful for everybody. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody. We'll catch you next time on the podcast. Have a great day. Well, that's a wrap. Another episode of our podcast. I hope you learned a lot. And if you did, you should hit subscribe, right? Have you subscribed to this podcast yet? We come out with new content every single Monday. We're interviewing great guests. We're uncovering great tips that are going to help your school. Hit the subscribe button. And if you haven't left me a review yet, I'd love to hear from you there. So just hit a review. Now, in the show notes, you can actually sign up for my newsletter. You guys, socialschoolforedu.com, we've been serving schools since 2014. We just focus on social media. And if you want helpful videos and blog articles and links to other helpful content, you're going to want to be on that free newsletter. So check that out in the show notes and get signed up today. SocialSchoolForEDU.com is our website. You can check out more of what we offer there. My mission is to help schools celebrate what's going on in their districts with social media. We work with public schools, we work with private schools, we work with charter schools, and we share all of our experience through free content and through some paid services, which include a membership program, a webinar pass. We even do full management for schools. We just want to make social media and celebrating schools easier. So you can check out more at our website, socialschoolforedu.com. Until next time, guys, keep telling those stories.